Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And joining us now is an actor, someone that you may recognize from shows, ABC Scandal, for example, Stomp the Yard movie, Cadillac Records, and a new autobiography out, Short Stories, Columbus Short. Thank you so much for joining us on KMOX.
Man, thank you for having me.
And
shout out to Missouri.
I know, you're a Kansas City guy, which is pretty exciting. So
yes.
Do you make it back to the state often?
I haven't been back in a few years, but I was there all the time.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was actually in St. Louis last year.
Oh, cool. What brought you to St. Louis?
I was doing a show out there, so.
Oh, perfect.
Came out, and it was good to be back in the Lou.
Yeah, and as I understand right now, you are working out during this interview, which makes things a little bit more exciting. Which, by the way, that sounds like an internet YouTube series. You interview someone while they're working out.
Yeah, that, because you'll get the truth there, right? No, it was funny because I've done like 7 of these today, and they forgot to tell me that I had a 5 o'clock. And I'm like, oh, we can't miss it. I was like, I'm calling them. Send me the number.
Oh, that's perfect. You know, and by the way, you started acting at a very young age. What were your first professional roles, the roles you were paid for? Did they start in Kansas City?
No, they actually started in L.A. Mm-hmm. I started doing commercials really young. I got a Denny's commercial at one line. I did a Busta Rhymes commercial, Mountain Dew commercial. It was a pretty big spot, pretty big deal at that time for me. And I just kind of worked that way, guest stars and commercials when I was a kid.
Oh, that's awesome. And how did that lead into your first roles into, you know, movies and television? So from there, you're doing some guest spots and you're just getting your name out there, I'm guessing.
Right. But I was in a performing arts school, so I was ready to guide. I was ready to work, and I wasn't booking the leads and series like I was hoping I was, even as a young man. And so I went and auditioned for the show Stomp on Broadway, got it at 17, left on tour, and I did that for 2 years. So I took a break from actual Hollywood from like 17 to 19.
Yeah.
I came back from Stomp, and all my friends were making money dancing. And I went back to a couple of auditions, and I got to producers and got callbacks, and they were like, you got to cut your dreads. I had grown these dreads out and grown pretty fond of them. And I didn't want to do that. So I was like, what am I going to do? So I started dancing, and then I started choreographing, and then I ended up choreographing for Britney. And then it was a movie after that. I was like, all right. Now I need to get back to what I know, what I love. And then I came back, and kind of all of my skill sets kind of lined up for me to get my first lead role, which was Stomp the Yard, because I had done the Stomp tour, had been a choreographer. So it was kind of like I was training for that movie that whole time, and I didn't even know it.
Oh, that is awesome. And part of, you say 17, so how does that work with school? Do you exit at that point, or do you, like, do it on the road?
So I was in an art school, and it was February when I got the show, and I lied and told them I was 18, so they didn't even know I was in high school. So I went, and when I got in the show, because I went to school with, like, Jody Sweetin and, you know, the kids from Roseanne, and, you know, everybody was working, you know, pretty much a lot of kids were working at my school. So I told them I got the show, and they were like, all right, we're going to go, you know, we're going to go around to all your teachers. This is your senior year. We'll get all the last stuff that you need. Maybe it's going to be 6 weeks of packets. Mm-hmm. They gave me these packets, and I moved to San Francisco, and I did the packets while I was there, while I was rehearsing for the show, and came back and graduated.
Wow. So was this before or after, like, reality shows, like So You Think You Can Dance were out there?
Way before. I'm 38 now. I just turned 38 Saturday.
Happy birthday to you. So part of reality shows like that, there's a different route for people that want to make a career in dancing. So they did that for singing and entertaining and all these other types of careers inside of the entertainment world, music. Now they have it for dancing, too. You go in a different route. You're working hard. You're on the road. You're doing everything you can. That has to be pretty exhausting.
Oh, it was exhausting. 8 shows a week. You know, our only day off day was Monday, so it was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 2 shows on Saturday, 2 shows on Sunday. And we did that straight for 2 years. And I mean, there's something to be said about that. I think that a lot of that true art and that true commitment and that true, you know, not everybody in the business right now, unfortunately, has gone through that. They've come, I guess I would call it a shortcut. Mm-hmm. So, you know what I mean? But all of that time and all of those hours, they refine your craft, they perfect your craft, they perfect you as a professional. And they get you ready for, you know, being on the grueling show or being, you know, doing those, you know, 16-hour work days on a movie. Yeah. It just prepares you. It prepares you in a different way. It gives you a different kind of work ethic.
He's a Kansas City kid, traveled the world, and has done some pretty amazing things as an actor and a choreographer. His name is Columbus Short. In his autobiography called Short Stories, comes out next week, Tuesday, September 29th. We'll continue our conversation with him next on Overnight America, KMOX. This may be a first for us. Actor Columbus Short joins us on a treadmill while he's working out to talk about his new book that's coming out. Inside of your book, which comes out next week, by the way, Tuesday, September 29th, Short Stories is the name of the autobiography, and actor Columbus Short joining us here on KMOX. Part of you talk about just not only being exhausting and just going from one thing to another and working hard, the mental toll that has to have, it was really taxing on you, it sounds like.
It was, you know, because it's, you want to perform at a high level and you're in a high level business with high pressures. You know, all of that combined is just a jambalaya for anxiety and for, and in a business where perfection is demanded, you know, I carry that. I'm a perfectionist. Like, nobody's going to be harder on me than myself. So, you know, doing all of that, it was demanding.
Yeah. Where did that lead you? Because when those sort of demands come in, you hear it all the time, and they used to have it on E, the true Hollywood stories, and it always took a turn at some point in the story. Once the demands got too high, there's always a turn in the story. Where was your turn?
Well, my turn in the story. So I was at the peak of my career at that time, a few years back, about 6 years back. Now, yeah, 2012 was, you know, yeah, we're on season 2 of Scandal. I was on ABC Scandal. I was doing Harrison, but my personal life was just, everything was great in my career, actually. It was like my personal life was a hot mess. And I was in a horrible marriage. And I was drinking and using substances to try to numb that situation and push through. Do you know what I mean? And push through because, again, I'm a professional. I got the show always goes on, no matter what condition I am. I can't call in because I'm having a horrible day at home, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I did that for at a high level for about a year when my home life was at an absolute bottom, mm-hmm. and I balanced that show and that problem at home and that personal and my personal demon for about a year until I started to crack. Mm. And at that point, you know, it was like, look, Columbus, you got to get out of this situation that you're in at home. We know we're your family. The scandal family speaking, Shonda Rhimes, we're your family. We got you. You have to let that situation go. So stepping away from that situation, that marriage, you know, unfortunately, you know, she took it upon herself to drag me, you know, she didn't want to see me, you know, have a life without her. So the one thing you can do is, you know, drag somebody's name and change somebody's name, whether it's true or not. And she knew that, whether it's true or not, you know, it's out there. And you know, she said awful things about me, that I was a person that I'm completely not. Mm. You know, you could have called me an alcoholic. You could have called me, you know, a drug guy, whatever. But to call me an abuser and to tell TMZ these things, and TMZ, you know, they always looking for the story. Mm. It just went to a level that I wasn't mentally, spiritually, or physically ready to even come back. You know how some people, you know, I wasn't Harrison Wright. I wasn't Olivia Pope. Like, I couldn't do that for my own life. I was so ashamed of my own abuse that I didn't want to speak up about the abuse done to me. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Or the injustice done to me. So I just let it ride. And it did damage. I mean, it did a lot of damage. And it just, you know, when you're that low, you just go lower. You let yourself spiral lower. And it just was about a year. For about a year, a year and a half, maybe two, I just floated in the ethos. I didn't have the job anymore. Bridges were burnt. Mm. People thought I was some guy that I wasn't. And I didn't know how to pick up my pieces. Until one day I just got tired. I was tired. And I was like, who are you? Like, you are, this is not you. And no matter what's going on, you got to pick up the pieces. And I started with myself. It was like, I got to clean myself up. And it wasn't like somebody had to tell me. It was, I had to do that. And then from there, you know, my longtime friend, which is now my wife, she was in my life. And I had cleaned myself up and I got a movie role. And that was great, because work was what I needed, right? To do what I loved was what I needed. And from there, it was like, I had enough money to like rebuild. And, you know, we ended up getting married, having a son, where we have two now, and just building a life that was outside of Hollywood, outside of anything, an authentic, real life, a life that I can be proud of. Because I was always proud of my work, but I was never really proud of my life. And so to rebuild that, part of that treatment for me was to write. You know, you can work out, you can sit down with a therapist, you can do groups, you can do all the things, you can build a life, but you're still dealing with things that were deep. And I think to write, and I was still dealing with a narrative out there about me that I didn't like. And I had to be honest with that. I hated it. So I was like, the only way I can do this, I have to write it. You know, I have to write this down and I have to start from the beginning. And that inspired the book.
Wow.
And here we are talking about it.
Yeah, no kidding. And you were able to do all of that. And you're on a treadmill right now?
Yeah, and I'm on a treadmill right now.
How are you able to do that on a treadmill? You must be in fantastic shape. And you must have some great lungs to be able to do all of that while on a treadmill. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. That's hilarious.
Well, you start to write these things down, and we find in stories when anyone goes back and has a reflection of their life, there's probably moments that you're reminded of by other people that you've forgotten about. Were there any of those moments when you were writing this book, short stories?
Okay, so that is a true point, but I'm like this guy. I'm like, my memory is uncanny. Hmm. Like, it's, I remember dates and times and like, I mean, and that's what I wanted to do. I was like, I want to tell every single thing I remember how I got here. And I kind of had a jumping off point, because one of the things that I did in treatment was, kind of journal, you know, from childhood and deal with childhood traumas and, you know, stories. So I was, they were fresh. They were bubbling up because I was dealing with them. I was facing them and addressing them. And so it was easy to jump right in. And then the recent years, you know, I've lived so, like, I feel like I had more stories to tell because everything in my life has been a story. And like, I've lived a dream life in most senses. I've been lived the life of a rock star. I've toured around the world. I've been beautiful places with beautiful people, you know, and that and made a lot of money and lived a life from this little kid from Kansas City, Missouri that, you know, is unbelievable. So you don't forget those moments. I wish one of the things I wish is that I was more present in those moments. Because when I look back on it, I'm like, wow, that was amazing. And I didn't even take it like that in the moment. I wasn't thankful and present. I was just going from moment to moment and missed them completely. And, you know, so that's one of the things in my life now. It's like, I don't ever want to miss another moment.
Wow. And you know what really, for me at least, makes those moments where you have to remind yourself to be in the moment is when you're sitting there with your kids and you look them and it's so amazing because sometimes you can get so exhausted and frustrated because you got a bunch of other things going on and, you know, you did a million other things that day and then they come to you and they want to play or read a book or do
and
these
they
things.
Play.
And you look at them and for a moment you think, oh, I'm just too tired. I can't do this. But then you have to remember one day in the future, you're going to look back at this and say, I would have given anything in the world to relive this one moment to sit down with my kid when he was this age. And it's so good to have those self-realizations in life that there's all these little moments that go on around you that you just do not appreciate that you should.
Oh, man, you nailed it with the kids. Like, I have an older son now who's going off to college. Wow. And while I was on Scandal, I didn't want, it was like he would start his football. And I promised him I would coach his team. I promised him I was coach him up. He wanted to be a quarterback. And one of the most important things for me was to be, I never missed a practice. I never missed a game. I coached him for 3 years, championship football. And that was those are the moments that were amazing. And like now my 3-year-old son, now he's like, all he wants is daddy's attention. And I'm so much more, you know, I was go when my older son was coming up, but I'm so much more present. And I think because I'm so much present, more present within myself.
Yeah.
You know, that those little moments mean everything. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So the book is coming out, the autobiography coming out next week. And it's called Short Stories, Columbus Short, the actor we're speaking to now. And by the way, you know, Amazon and places like that, people can pick up the books. Is there a website or someplace that you would direct people to look it up?
They can go to Target. They can go to Target.
Yeah.
They can go to Walmart. I was happy to hear they picked it up.
Oh, great.
You know, so definitely Amazon, definitely iBooks.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon, iBooks, Target, Walmart.
Yes, all great places. One last question. I was looking at some of the quotes you had on the book. One's from Mike Tyson. Do you have a friendship with Mike Tyson?
Yeah, so one of the things that I was, when I was writing, somebody said to me, a writer, they're like, Columbus, you know, you got to write yourself back into existence, right? And I was like, huh? I never even heard that before. So I started writing. I wrote a sequel to Stomp the World, and that started my conversation and dialogue again with Sony, which was the studio that made me a star. And then I wrote this. I had an idea about I wanted to play a boxer. So I met with Evander Holyfield. He was telling me his life story, and I was like, you know what would be crazy? You know, Mike's story is so parallel to so much of the things you're saying, Evander, have Mike in it. So why don't we go get Mike, and why don't we do a series called Heavyweights about you and Mike, a limited series about your rise, you guys' rise from kids to that fateful day when he bit your ear. He loved it, and I went and pitched it to Mike and his wife, and he loved it, and then I wrote the series, and we've been close ever since.
Oh, cool. That is so cool.
And it's been great to see Mike. Mike can't speak enough about how amazing he is as a man because, you know, I thought I went to hell and back. Like, this man literally went to hell and back. And to see him, who he is, it's a true testament of you're not where you started. You know, you're not who you used to be. You can be whoever you want to be, you know, starting right now. And he's turned his life completely around. And it's been such a mentor and dropping jewels and such a sensei for me. in such a beautiful way. So, you know, big shout out to Mike Tyson, man. Love him.
Oh, that's great. So if you go online, you can find the ebook. You can order it or Walmart, Target starting next week. Short Stories, The Autobiography of Columbus Short. From Kansas City all around the world. It's pretty amazing, the story. And I got to say, I'm glad that you spent some time with us here tonight. Columbus, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Yeah, I appreciate you dealing with me on the treadmill. That's awesome. Thank you, guys.
And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric Guest Line on Overnight America, KMOX.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
And Overnight America is live for the next 20 minutes or so. So if you want to get in, this is kind of your last chance to do so at 314-436-7900. There's a couple of things I saw that I wanted to get to. And this one story from Fox News, and this has really been covered by pretty much every network at this point. So if you go down to California, oh, man, California is a mess, capital M, mess. And Governor Newsom, with his next executive order, is to ban gas and diesel cars in the state by 2035. That's the thing. Ban gas and diesel cars to 2035. So Governor Newsom signed this executive order, aims to ban the sale of new internal combustion engine cars by 2035. There's so much that I look at this and say, what an absolute joke that is. Big surprise that companies are moving out of there. Big surprise that people are moving out of there. Big surprise that of all the other issues they have, they're going to add something else to it. I mean, just look at this in a logical sense for a moment. Imagine you're living in California. The cost of living is sky high. You can't afford anything anyway. Rents and just terrible. Homeless continues to rise. The numbers of people on the street up there. Taxes continue to go up. And all of a sudden you're going to say, oh yeah, by the way, you're no longer allowed to buy a cheaper combustion engine anymore. And then on top of that, you're going to have to retrofit your home to get all of the to get it up to snuff, to get a new car in there for the electric side of things. You got to put the terminals in, a battery, whatever it is. Now we're going to force you to get a certain type of car if you're going to be purchasing it here in California. Like you can afford it already. How terrible does it have to get in California before everyone decides, all right, enough's enough? And what if California flips to a red state because of just how insane it's getting in that state? Now, I wanted to play something for you. I'm a fan of a YouTuber, Awakened by JP. And he, you know, it's funny because I played his stuff in the past. I thought it was just funny. Probably the first time I played him on the show was when he was doing the whole bit on Tesla and just the fanaticism around Tesla as a brand and the people that think Tesla could do no wrong. Now, I have a lot of respect and admiration for Elon Musk. I'm not buying myself a Tesla. Not a chance. It ain't worth it. But I find that the people that do buy those things, it's like Apple in a sense, where if they're going to get a cell phone, it's got to be another Apple. If they get a computer, it's got to be an Apple. And it doesn't matter if it costs twice as much as everything else. It doesn't matter. It's got that Apple logo on it. It's like a lifestyle thing. It's a branding thing. It's a pretty much it's their identity wrapped into an electronic device. And for so many people, that's what the Tesla cars are like. So Awakened by JP, he kind of made fun of it. I followed his stuff in the past, and he's always been really funny. I didn't realize that he was someone that made conservative-style comedy. Now, I don't want to label him as any type of conservative or liberal or whatever it is. I don't know where he sits on the political spectrum. He's just very good at coming up with comedy that is right-leaning. And I saw this one about living in California. So the whole idea is, hey, he's in California. Here's the mindset living in California. I thought, what a perfect time to look back at this video that was released, already over a million views to it, and it was just released a few days ago, as Governor Newsom banning cars and diesel cars by 2035, at least internal combustion cars, you know, gas vehicles.
I'm living in the world's largest prison. It's called California. It's, no, seriously, it's been kind of getting a bad rap lately, but I assure you, it's never been better living in California. The freedom-suppressing theme that's strong in California is so fashionable right now. The communists like lockdowns, wear a mask everywhere you go, stay off the beach orders. They basically have a put yourself in the body bag now order. So progressive. I understand why California has such a large prison population. People are trying to get in just to have a little freedom. But I wouldn't.
People are trying to get into prison just to get a little freedom. Oh, my. All right. Now, California's got its problems, one of which is taxes and one of which is homelessness. And we have our own problems when it comes to the homeless in the city of St. Louis. The city does a pretty terrible job at helping the homeless. The city also does a pretty terrible job at trying to encourage people to help the homeless, because they punish people trying to help the homeless in the city of St. Louis. California, it's so much worse in the situation they're in.
People say we have a problem with homelessness here. Completely untrue. We are having no problem growing it at exponential rates. Seeing tent cities all over the place, it's basically camping. People enjoying the wilderness.
Wow.
It's good for you. I think we need more of it. And the fact that we allow them to take over our sidewalks, parks, and other public places so the taxpaying public can't use those public places makes us as loving and accepting as a spineless doormat. I, for one, don't want to raise my kids in a place where they don't have to walk across human feces and needles just to get to their front door. How else would they learn about hepatitis C?
Okay, now, by the way, that's not an exaggeration. That is what's going on in California. It's so bad. It's so bad that they said you got to see it for your own eyes to understand just how bad it is. Imagine and think about the way homelessness is spurred based on the skyrocketing rates of, you know, how much it costs to just the cost of living in California, not only for mortgages, but for rent or whatever it is. And it just becomes impossible. You find it impossible to live. And then the option of living on the street is maybe your only option. The weather's nice enough to do it, I guess. But the thing is, they go to the public areas, the streets, the sidewalks, in front of businesses, in front of neighborhoods. And then they realize, you know what? If no one's going to stop us, we're just going to go into the rich neighborhoods. So imagine you finally made it. You buy yourself a $1 million home, a $2 million home in California, which is probably comparable to a $500,000 home here in St. Louis. But you get yourself a $2 million home. You're in a nice neighborhood. You're looking around. You think you finally made it. And then across the street is a homeless encampment because the city's not going to do anything to stop it. And that's part of the problem, too. They're doing a terrible job managing it and really not offering much into it. And with that also comes the needles and the human waste, and they just can't keep up on that either. You know, San Francisco, by the way, you remember the story from last year where they hired people and it was like, what, $110,000 a year? You can go around picking up human feces. It's such a demand. They got full-time jobs of people going through the city to do this sort of thing. And they needed to hire additional people. They couldn't do it with what they had currently staffed. And that doesn't do anything. It doesn't fix anything. It doesn't stop it. It just allows it so you're not having to step over it. And the problem, too, is that in California, it's not getting any better. And that's just a part of it. And that's no exaggeration what he's setting up there.
The high California taxes are a joy. Getting to pay the most to live in the worst conditions, it only means one thing. I'm smart and our politicians know what they're doing. Taking an exorbitantly high amount of income and getting junk in return kind of makes it seem like our politicians are running a giant pyramid scheme. And we all know pyramids are the most stable structures on earth. But now I don't have to worry about the state income tax because the state won't let me work. I have no income.
Oh boy.
My kids are getting really hungry. Is that a problem?
Yeah. If you wanted to look his channel up, it's well worth your time. It's Awaken with JP, and that's his most recent video. Over 1 million views on that thing already. And the thing you never know about is when you post things like that online, if you're going to find people just absolutely hate it and reject it, because in the world of the internet, making fun of anything that's left-leaning, like California and their policies, normally is rejected immediately. But in this case, there's a wide embrace. So maybe, who knows, the tide could be turning in California. Imagine people finally getting fed up with it, and this could be the last straw, but probably not. One more segment left of Overnight America KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And here we are in Overnight America for just a couple of more minutes, and then we're going to head out. So big congratulations again to Yadier Molina, 2,000 hits. He is a Hall of Famer, period. End of discussion. And there, what was it? Let me read this one tweet. I posted it on my Facebook page, Ryan Recker Radio. If you wanted to go look up me on Facebook, I took a screenshot of Charlie Marlowe's Twitter account where he said this. He said, if Yadier Molina plays 2 more seasons, which seems very possible, he'll finish with at least 2,000 hits. 1,000 RBIs, 400 doubles, 2 World Series titles, 9 Gold Gloves, 9 All-Star games. That's a Hall of Fame catcher. End of discussion. Absolutely true. 100% true. So I want to say yes, yes, yes. I hope you also agree. And maybe if you want to go online and discuss that, you can. But Yadier Molina, Hall of Fame worthy, absolutely in my book. Very true. A few of things I wanted to get to before we say goodbye for the week. I had a bunch of audio, and there was one story that started to really, really make a lot of rounds. It was President Trump. Is he, you know, they did the whole thing, and I got to say, this is going to be a whole bunch of nothing. So they keep asking him, oh, if you don't win the election, are you going to leave peacefully or whatever it is? And basically his response, almost every time I've seen him answer this, his response is, we're going to have to see what happens. There's so many variables that can go into this election. We're going to have to see what happens. If he feels like he's slighted or something was off, then he's going to contest it. And I think that's one of the big reasons why there's going to have to be someone else in the Supreme Court in order to make a decision if there was a slight or if there was something that is wrong and worthy of investigation or whatever it is. There can't be any sort of discretion in that sort of thing. I guess the best thing would be if, for whatever reason, there's just a outpour of support for Donald Trump and all the states vote red, and it's kind of like a Reagan year, and you see that he wins in a landslide and there's no contention whatsoever, and then I guess you could see what happens, and maybe Joe Biden goes down that exact same route, which he could, or then magically a bunch of ballots start showing up. Oh, whoa, we just found some more ballots. It's crazy. Let's see how this impacts the election. So the thing is, when it comes to leaving, I don't think, because this is what happens when they report it. And the way that they decide to report this story, they make it sound like he's going to call in the army and he's going to have to sit there and they're going to defend him and he's going to refuse to leave. And, you know, finally they're going to have to pull him off by his feet and he's going to be, you know, kicking and dragging and he's going to be pounding his fist on the ground. And, you know, there's going to be some dramatic thing. No, I think all that's going down is basically saying that there are so many things that are going on. There could be a point of contention and he's not going to concede if there's a contention point. So let's see. In the White House, they continue to ask this, and I think they're purposely trying to make this into something, because they feel like it's going to be a good thing for Joe Biden to bring up during the debate. Like, oh, he's going to score some points for it. So it's basically the media out there is just using this as an opportunity to grease the wheels for Joe Biden, who can pick it up and try to make it a lot easier for him. So I think this is all a bunch of nothing. I don't believe there's a whole lot with it. Like, here we go. President Trump with reporter on election outcome. Let's play some of these clips.
Will you commit to making sure that there is a peaceful transferal of power after the election?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens. You know that I've been complaining very strongly about the ballots, and the ballots are a disaster.
I understand that, but people are rioting. Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transferal of power?
We want to get rid of the ballots, and we'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation.
Yeah, so that's basically what he's saying. That's what I get out of that. But however, their contention, they're saying, why don't you just say you'll leave the White House? So basically what they're doing is they're trying to get him to set up that he's going to lose. They're trying to get him to admit that he could lose, and he's not someone that wants to admit he could lose. So he's saying we're going to have to look at it and take it by the way it is. Let's see. Here's President Trump. One other thing.
We need 9 justices. You need that. With the unsolicited millions of ballots that they're sending, it's a scam, it's a hoax, everybody knows that, and the Democrats know it better than anybody else. So you're going to need 9 justices up there. I think it's going to be very important, because what they're doing is a hoax with the ballots.
Kayla McEnany, she was also asked about it, and she does the press conferences for the White House.
The president will accept the results of a free and fair election. He will accept the will of the American people.
So for clarity, if he loses and it's free and fair, he will accept.
I've answered your question. He will accept the results of a free and fair election.
Yeah. All right. And let's see a little bit more with Jonathan Carl.
You are referring to the question asked by the Playboy reporter, right?
I'm referring to the president being asked if there would be a peaceful transfer of power, and he did not say say yes.
Yeah,
so
I believe.
I'm asking, will there be a peaceful transfer of power if he loses this?
I believe that question asked by the Playboy Power. In fact, I think I have it right here. He was asked when lose or draw whether he would accept the transfer of power. I'm not entirely sure if he won why he would accept a transfer of power. That is maybe the deranged wish of that reporter, but that's not how governing works. The president will accept the results of a free and fair election, but I think that your question is more fitting to be asked of Democrats who have already been on the record saying they won't accept the results of an election. In fact, I have several of them here for you. South Carolina Democrat Jim Clyburn has said that Trump is not going to win fairly. Senator Barbara Boxer has said that the only way Trump will win is to steal it. That's according to Democrat Senator Barbara Boxer. The Washington Post has noted, they have a headline, Democrats may not trust the results of the election if Trump wins. And then you have that beautiful quote from Hillary Clinton that Joe Biden should not concede under any circumstance. So I think your fitting is more fitting question for Democrats.
And boom goes the dynamite. I think that's a point that should be taken. Now, keep in mind, they're not going to ask those questions to the Democrats, because I think the strategy here is to try to set this up so Joe Biden could pick it up and, you know, use this as a nice talking point to make it look like he's scoring some points. But if they were to treat the Democrats the same way they treat the Republicans in this case, that's what I would like to see. I would like to see a little fairness every once in a while, but you just don't see it. Let's go to Ted Cruz. What did he say about this?
There is going to be a peaceful transition of power. And the real threat is the threat that Joe Biden has been explicit about, that if he loses the election, he intends to challenge the election.
Yeah, that's the threat of Joe Biden. Kevin McCarthy.
There will be a very peaceful transition. A concern I have, though, too, I hope you ask the same question of Hillary Clinton, who simply said out there, never concede the race.
I'd like to see them do that. Now, that would be great to come up in the debate itself. Maybe they can do it, but, you know, Joe would absolutely dodge that. Well, that does it for us here on Overnight America. We do the Sunday night through Thursday night, which means we'll be back Sunday night, and who knows, maybe we'll get a better idea of what the Cardinals' playoff hopes look like at that point. Let's hope they don't have to play on Monday. It'd be nice if they just got on in. All right. Have a great night. Have a great weekend. We'll see you again Sunday night at 11. Have a great weekend. Bye.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.